Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
Lieutenant Jim Perez, Fairfield Police Department. Crime on the mind. Melissa in the Morning. WICC 600.
Good morning, Lieutenant Perez. I know we have talked in length, especially this past year, about recruiting officers and not just officers, good officers. It's a hard thing that I think most police departments are facing, especially in this last year. And I was curious if I could get your take on recruiting. First and foremost, how is Fairfield currently doing with officers and recruitment and coming out of a pretty tough year against police nationwide?
Yeah, we've been fortunate, but I will tell you this, and there's been a trend in police departments around the state where we used to look at brand new, interested candidates and turning them into police officers. And now the trend has been that we've been taking people that are already certified, and so they're leaving other departments. Now, there used to be a rule that, first there was no rule, and so someone would get hired by a certain town and then or city, and then all of a sudden they would get recruited again while in the academy and they would leave. And that became a problem. So all the chiefs got together and they decided, let's come up with some type of rule or law that we can't really take from each other. They maybe have to serve like 2 years or something. But now apparently I think things have changed again. And I'm not sure if that's still the rule, but I will tell you this. What you are seeing is a direct result of the attacks that police have been receiving, verbal attacks, over the defunding and all this crazy stuff. And you and I, we've talked about this at length and ad nauseum at times, but mm-hmm. I will tell you this. There, you're starting to see the results of that. And what you're starting to see is they're starting to basically evaporate from the cities. And that's because the cities aren't really supporting them the way they should be supporting them. And a lot of it is policies. And then what happens is they start to absorb into the suburbs. But I'm telling you right now, even the suburbs will be in trouble in the next 3 to 5 years, because what's going to happen is the retention rate is going to be very low as they continue these attacks against police and these different idiotic tendencies or thoughts. What they're really not realizing is that they're really kind of like messing with their own selves, because these people who are coming up with these rules are the ones that are going to become victims. You know what I mean? Eventually. And
right.
It's just unfortunate, but that's going to happen.
Right, mm-hmm. Because we rely on our police, but if they don't feel like they're being supported, police are not going to want to do those jobs. What I think is interesting, Lieutenant Perez, is, the reason I ask this is I'm sure you heard about it, but Bridgeport Police mm-hmm. having a very hard time retaining new officers. They said that a lot of times mm-hmm. they are leaving, like you said, for nearby towns. And according to the mm-hmm. acting police chief, Rebecca Garcia, she said that typically a lot of officers are going to stations like Hamden, Shelton, and Stamford. Now, what I thought was interesting mm-hmm. is, some of those are really big cities, considered big cities here in Connecticut. But what mm-hmm. I think is interesting is, again, they're cities. So, like, why one department over another? Like, if in general police are not being supported, they're not being backed, they're not being respected the way mm-hmm. that they feel they should be, what makes the difference? Why go from Bridgeport to Shelton or Bridgeport to Stamford? Like, that doesn't make sense to me.
Because I need you to understand that when you're talking about a police officer looking into their future, right? Mm-hmm. There's lots of things to consider. So you have to consider the environment. Mm-hmm. Do they have support? Honestly, listen, people sometimes say it's about money, but it's not about money. It's about the support that you get from your local authorities and from those from the community itself. And I've often said this, you're only as safe as the community's interest in the police department, you know what I mean? Because working hand in hand, we can kind of like almost at a live version react to issues and prevent them from happening. But when you have a community that doesn't appear to support the police or that overwhelmingly attack the police or don't really just appreciate them, then now I want you to consider that. That's just one facet of it. Now start looking at the history of the police or the future of the police officers. So now they have to think about, things like insurance for their family, things like, being compensated well enough, things about retirement, all these things make a huge difference. And when you start chipping away, when you talk about defunding the police, it's much more than just taking away equipment, right? Mm-hmm. It's much more about disbanding units of crime, right? It's also about futures. So you're talking insurance. So there could be a myriad of reasons of why people are leaving Bridgeport. I don't think in Bridgeport's case, it's one particular thing. I think it's a series of things that is a trend. that's a trend. And Bridgeport, being one of the biggest cities, is going to feel it first. Hartford's going to feel it first. New Haven's going to feel it first. Then you're going to get secondary cities like New London, even like Shelton, things like that. They're going to start to feel it. And ultimately, every suburb in Connecticut is going to feel it. I'm telling you, there is a slow-moving wave that's heading this way, and most people don't even see it, but I'm telling you, it's coming, and it's not a good wave.
So I think our conversation continuing, especially with the news story out of Bridgeport that the acting police chief, Rebecca Garcia, is looking to possibly have new officers pledged to stay for a minimum of 5 years. Because what's happening is we're dumping boatloads of money into new officers. They get training and then they leave for another department. So, Lieutenant Perez, do you think this is a good idea? Do you think this will help the department keep officers, or do you think this is going to actually hurt them in the recruiting process?
Well, it sounds like a good idea, right? So on its face value, it looks like it's a great idea. The problem is that who are you going to get today to commit? We can't even get officers to commit to even getting hired. Much
True.
Less you're going to commit someone to get 5 years. Listen, it comes down to self-preservation, right? So these officers that decide to move from bigger cities to smaller towns is because it's self-preservation. They're trying to preserve themselves, right? They're on the attack, and they're trying to preserve themselves and go to a place that still harbors some sort of admiration towards police. And listen, years ago, even Hollywood was pro-police. I mean, there were shows like Dragnet, Adam 12, Hawaii 50, SWAT, Starsky and Hutch. I mean, you could name them. Everybody looked up to a police officer. And now today, with this rhetoric that's coming down, with this anti-police rhetoric, that's permeating pretty much every single area of our society, it's gone the opposite way. And so cops are fleeing. But a pledge can work only if, to answer your question, a pledge can work only if you have the proper incentives to keep good people there. And that includes, it doesn't necessarily have to be a financial incentive, but it could be support, gratitude towards the officer, a respect, you know, making sure they have the proper equipment that they need, making sure that, you know, when you're going up against complaints, that it's actually a valid complaint, not just someone who's mad at the police. Mm-hmm. You know, these things, believe it or not, are inherently greater. People desire these much more than I think they do even money. So any business, right, if you have a great environment, there's a reason why Amazon, the unions tried muscling in, and ultimately all of those workers rejected it. Why would they ever do that if unions promised you this, that, or the other, right? It's because if you treat someone with respect and you treat them well and you appreciate them, they're going to be loyal back to you. And it's no different with police departments. You want to do a pledge, that's fine. I think ultimately it probably will hurt rather than help, only because to lock someone in for 5 years and then they start seeing that the conditions are not good, they're just gonna leave and they're gonna feel like they were tricked. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so
here's... It can only work if you support them.
Right. So here's my question, Lieutenant Perez. I'm curious, you know, do you think that we are... You keep saying that there's this wave coming and people don't see it coming. Mm-hmm. Do you think we're heading down a road where we're going to be so desperate to recruit any officers that the quality is going to go down significantly?
Without a doubt. And listen, I will say this to you. Would you just hire anyone to come into your house? Anyone.
No.
Looking person, or he looks like a drug addict or whatever. Would you just have him come into your house? No, you would never do that, right?
No, of course
police
not.
Police officers have to be trusted. They have to be upstanding. They have to be, they're the best that our society offers. And when you start messing with them and you start degrading them and you start, like putting them down and trying to take away this and that and defunding them, you are literally rocking and cracking the foundation that literally keeps all of us safe, ultimately. So you may love a police officer, you may hate a police officer, but you need a police officer. I've always said it's like insurance. Mm-hmm. You need them because when things go bad, you're happy to see them, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But on a normal basis, right, they can probably give you a ticket here and there, and so people start getting, a little snippy about it, and they don't really necessarily like us. But ultimately, every police officer that's working today is doing it, I believe, because from their heart, they really want to help. They really want to make a difference in the community. And the only difference that we're seeing is that the community support that was there years ago is just simply not as strong as it used to be. Now, luckily, in town, we still have largely the support, right? Mm. But I think this wave coming is going to knock everybody down. I don't think no matter how much Because, listen, if Bridgeport falls, right, then all the surrounding communities fall. Right.
Right. Because now you guys are going to have to overcompensate. Right. I mean, that would basically that's what I was kind of getting at, is if we can't get the numbers up for Bridgeport, I would imagine they would then call on surrounding communities to come in for these, you know, whether it's active
Correct.
Shooting, whatever it may be. And now you're draining, let's just say, Fairfield, for
further
example.
Stressing.
Right.
Exactly. Further
right.
stressing. So listen, it's a wave effect. Right. So it's going to. Bridgeport is part of our Fairfield County family, and
right.
we have a responsibility. We really do. I mean, everybody in the county has a responsibility of making sure that Bridgeport succeeds, just like we have to make sure that every other town succeeds. We
mm-hmm.
have to help each other, because if we don't do that, we have nobody else to count on,
right.
and we're
going
to get overrun.
Mm-hmm.
And this wave is coming, and it's going to hit everybody. And eventually, every police officer is going to be overstressed, overworked, underpaid. They're going to start calling out sick more. This is a recipe for disaster in the way we're heading. We need to reverse that right now, and we need to start supporting our police department, supporting our police officers, support every single chief, stop overwhelming the chief with stupidity, right? So you want to call about all these little things when the chiefs of every department should be worrying about making sure that and administering their department and making sure that their officers have what they need to do the job correctly.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mandate that we have, and yet every single person is being overwhelmed right now. Every
right.
single officer is being overwhelmed right now. I feel it. Everybody feels it.
Right.
And it's
right.
only going to get substantially worse. And I think we need to all take a breather, sit back, and start thinking about the future, because the future is coming. Whether we like it or not, we're on a train, and the train ain't stopping.
Lieutenant Jim Perez.
You're going to, you know?
Yeah, no, you're right. It's things that we need to think about right now. And Lieutenant Jim Perez, we appreciate that every week you're transparent, you are honest, and that you tell us these things. And we appreciate your mindset on this. Thank you so much. And we'll talk again next week.
You're very welcome. All right. Have a good week.
Thank you. You too.
The latest from the state capitol about your own neighborhood. Connecticut Senate Majority Leader Bob Duff stops by Melissa in the morning. Now on WICC 600.
Good morning, Senator Duff. So glad that you are here. Obviously, on the agenda this morning, we are going to talk about marijuana legalization as well as the budget. But first, I did want to talk to you about a big story last week. House Speaker Matt Ritter addressing reports of excessive drinking by lawmakers at the state capitol. Now, I did talk to Senator Kevin Kelly about the Republican side, and I was hoping to talk to you about the Democratic side. Do you know of this happening? Like, has this happened before at the state capitol? Is there anything in writing saying you can't drink on the job?
We expect people to do their jobs, and so I don't know that there's anything in writing per se, but we would expect people to act in a way that would be the public would expect and the voters would expect us to behave at the state capitol.
Were you shocked, Senator Duff, by this announcement from Mr. Ritter?
The announcement about having alcohol at the capitol?
Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously, you know, there are times that people do have drinks, but I would say that, again, you know, for those of us in leadership, we would expect our members to behave in a way that our constituents would expect.
I mean, when we were talking to Senator Kelly last week, he said that this really puts like a black cloud over all of our lawmakers. Would you agree that even if it's just a few people who have done excessive drinking, it makes all of you kind of look bad?
Well, I would say that, you know, yes, that the fact that we don't want people to act in a way that puts a black eye on any of us, and that we would expect, again, people to behave in a way that is proper at state capitol, just like we would expect anybody to behave in any workplace that is proper.
Senator Duff, last question on this. Would you agree? So we had a lot of listeners weigh in on this because obviously they were very upset to hear about it. We don't know exactly who was accused of this, but we know that Matt Ritter had said, look, we would remove assignments from people if they were caught excessively drinking while at the Capitol. Would you agree that that's enough of a punishment? Would you do something different if it were up to you? Like, I know some people said they should be removed from office.
Well, removing somebody from office is a huge thing, and that's reversing the reversing an election done by the voters. So I think everything is really on a case-by-case basis. So I understand certainly why people would be upset. I think at any time there's something that's done by a member that is outside the normal boundaries, it makes everyone take notice and certainly makes all of us be more aware, but you know, we have to make sure that we're doing things that the punishment meets the crime. So if it's something we just need to have a conversation about, we have a conversation about. If we need to take more drastic action, we take more drastic action. But you know, I don't think it's one size fits all, but I think that we have to certainly, as leaders, lead by example for one, and then two, we need to show that and certainly ensure that we set the right expectations and the right tone for our members.
Can we confirm this morning that none of the votes, I was trying to say to our listeners, that none of the votes that happened during the legislative session, major votes, were I guess, in result of people who were drinking on the job. And what I mean by that is, you know, major bills were passed into law. And I think there's concern from some people that if we were relying on votes that were coming from people who were inebriated, things would be different. Would you say things would not be different, even with these claims from Matt Ritter?
Well, all I can say is that, you know, I'm not responsible for all 187 legislators on both sides of the aisle. And so your question is a bit leading and a little bit broad. But I would say that I have never seen anybody, Republican or Democratic, on a Senate floor cast a vote who didn't seem to be in the position to be able to cast a vote.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. Senator Bob Duff is here this morning. Now, two big items that we are literally down to just a couple of days to vote on and potentially pass. First, an agreement, it sounds like, has been reached, Senator Duff, on a bill that would legalize recreational marijuana. Could you just actually sort of outline, I know this is a 300-page bill, so I don't expect you to give me every single page of it, but some of the biggest highlights, would you say, with this bill? Like, what would happen if it passes into law?
Well, right. It is a 300-page bill that we just saw a few days ago. There has been intense negotiations for many months. I'm not going to articulate all 300 pages, obviously, but I will say that it does probably bring it down to a couple different categories. One, it legalizes. It sets up a system in which it can be sold. It sets up a position which people can get into the business, and it also sets up about equity and distribution, and allows a small amount of homegrown as well. So those are really pretty much the highlights of the bill. I mean, it's very broad highlights, obviously.
okay.
But, you know, there's social equity in there. There is, you know, minimum amounts where people can get, arrested, I guess. And it does not allow for somebody to have possession really under 18. This is really for a 21 and over crowd. And again, it talks a lot about equity as well.
Yeah, I was going to say about the equity, Senator Duff. I know that was one of the biggest I would think points of controversy throughout this whole process, or at least that seems to be the front headline in the last few weeks. How do you feel that's been addressed now with kind of this version of the bill? I was reading, I think, that it was something like within a certain mileage or however many people live in a town or city, you can have like a shop for marijuana, something like that. Like it sounded like there was more addressing this in this version of the bill.
Yeah, I believe so, which is why it's taken so long to get everybody on board, because there are so many moving parts. And as I said to you in the past, you know, other states have referenda, and they're able to vote on whether or not we would legalize or not marijuana, just like some of the states vote on whether or not you want to raise the minimum wage or not, and then they fill in the details afterwards. This is so complicated, and it's not just a bill that says, do we want to legalize recreational marijuana, yes or no, and then you just vote on that.
Right.
That's why the details have been so long. Plus, we also have the medical marijuana industry that's already been in the state, and you don't want to upend that, where people literally have invested millions of dollars in order to get that business up and running. So I think it's that's why there were so many pieces to this legislation that made it more complicated to write. But I think in the end, it strikes a good balance between social equity, between homegrown, which is very minimal as well, and strikes the ability to ensure that there's proper law enforcement here as well.
And Senator Duff, before I let you go, the other big news over the weekend, the budget agreement reached between Governor Lamont and legislative leaders. Looks like none of the major tax increases were included. That included the climate change initiative, also an insurance tax and a mileage, a truck mileage tax. It does look like lawmakers could start voting on that as early as today. Obviously, the session wrapping up Wednesday. Do you think it will pass as is?
Yeah, I think that you'll see a number of different pieces to the budget that are there, and that the residents of the state should be happy with the budget that we're going to be putting out. It invests quite a bit into our communities. It restores funding for educational funding that was missing in the governor's budget. It has a lot of initiatives for our communities, and I think that we've worked well with all corners and all sides in the budget negotiations to get something that the residents of the state will be very happy with. And, this is a year, again, that we're continuing to save in our rainy day fund. We're paying down our pension debt that is 70 years old, that had never been done before. And so we're not only paying for what we think are priorities right now, but we're also putting, huge down payments on paying down past debts that will free up funding in the future, so that we are working to eliminate those, topsy-turvies from the past because of this, these unfunded liabilities that literally go back to the 1930s.
Senator Duff, we always appreciate having you on Monday mornings. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
What's going on in the Capitol and how it affects you? State Senator Tony Wong joins Melissa in the Morning right now on WICC 600.
Senator Tony Wong, I am going to ask you a question that we did not talk about ahead of time because I feel a little frustrated. So do listeners. I have talked to both sides of the aisle. I've talked to our governor. I have asked the question whether or not major pieces of legislation in this session were voted on while anyone was inebriated. And I understand that it is frowned upon. I understand there's nothing in writing telling people that they cannot drink on the job. But I continue to worry that major bills were voted on, were discussed, and that they have life-changing decisions on the line for Connecticut residents. And it's just being kind of handled lightly, it seems like. And I'm just curious if you could comment on this. Were major pieces of legislation voted on while people were drunk on the job?
Well, it's an important question, and it is an important responsibility that we have as legislators. And here's my point on this. It all goes back to a sense of transparency. Could it have happened? Absolutely. The reality is the only reason we found out about it was through a broadcast of the proceedings and a transparency and accountability in which the public got to see the inebriated state of a legislator caught on video for transparency. The other part was a news report that talked about legislators partying on a rooftop during the middle session. These are unacceptable behaviors, and if those individuals had cast a vote, then pox on them. But I know, as Senator Duff said, I don't know of anyone as a close colleague of 31 in the Senate that have behaved in that way, so I can certifiably share with you that the Senate has not done so. But the reality, Melissa, is important to say. Transparency, accountability, and having that sense of a public and a viewpoint of what we do up there instead of a closed-door type of proceedings that we've been undergoing in this past session is important to note. Mm-hmm. The only way we knew about this was it was broadcasted.
Right.
News media got to it.
Yeah.
And people knew about it. And that's my frustration about this whole process we talk about so many times in this show, is the fact that there is no transparency. There is really no transparency and accountability of how we proceed in this. The budget is a great example, Melissa.
Yeah, I do want to talk about the budget with you, Senator Wong, but I just want to reiterate, were major bills that were signed into law at any point, do you have any doubt that they were passed while people were drunk?
Well, I can't say for certain what happens in the House, but I can say for certain in the Senate, with my colleagues that are casting votes and 36 of us, that if anybody was in an unfit state, that it would be significantly noticed. For
okay.
me, I have not observed that in the Senate.
Okay.
But that being said, Melissa, transparency and accountability is absolutely paramount for us as a legislative body.
I agree.
And unfortunately, a couple of points we're going to talk about, marijuana, the budget process, has not been transparent. It's been closed doors, one party rule type of dynamic with the governor and the House and Senate leadership. No more than 10, 12 people deciding the budget, deciding what we do for the process in regards to legalization of marijuana. That's not democracy. That's not accountability. Unfortunately, we're going to be sold a package of goods that says it's all good.
Well, I mean, and that's the thing, Senator Huang. On Friday afternoon, we were kind of excited to hear that the budget was looking like it did not include an insurance tax. It did not include a truck mileage tax, and it wasn't going to include the Going Clean initiative that Governor Lamont was pushing for months now. But you're saying, Senator Huang, that some of those taxes are just going to be reintroduced in a different way?
Absolutely. I mean, look, I was encouraged and I was eager to read the entire package, which to moment has not been released yet, Melissa. We're looking at a significant budget that is nearly $40 plus billion for 2 years that will affect all facets of our lives in the state of Connecticut. And we've been talking about it with news only from the Democratic leadership. But the rank and file and myself as Republicans have not seen the package as of yet. And we're going to have to filter through it with less than 3 days left in the session. That's not good government. The other part of it is, one of the questions you asked was these various taxes that have been touted as being removed.
Mm-hmm.
The health insurance tax, the TCI environmental tax,
right.
the digital ad tax, and the truck mileage tax have all been removed, and touting this as a no-tax budget. The budget itself may be, but guess what? Just what appeared this morning, an emergency certification, which bypasses all the committees, all the legislative processes, is a bill to consider truck mileage taxes.
Wait, what's an emergency certification? Apologies.
It's a
what
certification
is that?
Process that bypasses all the legislative process. It's done under a case of extreme emergency, quote unquote, that will facilitate us voting on it in the Senate and the House and passing through quickly. And it bypasses the legislative hearing process. It really is a emergency action. We did that for budgets. We did that for job issues that are time sensitive. But we're now going to utilize the emergency certification for a vote in the Senate and the House on the issue of truck mileage taxes, the same tax that we're purporting in the no tax budget to have removed.
So there is a vote that is now going back to an act concerning a highway use fee. Even though it's not in the budget, there is now an emergency certification that just came down today.
Yes, ma'am.
Cool. Great.
Well, it's not cool.
I mean, obviously not. That's crazy. So this is up for a vote, and we're done with the session in a couple of days. I mean,
yes,
could this pass?
It's the frustration that we're pitching a no-tax budget, which has been encouraging. I must compliment the fact that we have demonstrated the constraint. But make no mistake about it. The constraint of a no-tax has been buffeted by a rainy day fund that we've saved up because
right.
of good practices and discipline, and nearly $2 billion of federal stimulus money that cliffs away in 2 years. Nowhere in this budget have we made the discipline and needed changes in government and the increased spending. We are spending as though everything is okay, And that is the frustration is, that is why we got into the trouble we got into for the past 30, 40 years in the state. No discipline when the opportunity presents to make discipline cuts. So that's my frustration. But equally frustrating, Melissa, is the fact that we're going to tout a no-tax budget, but on the other end, we're going to pass emergency certification to put a mileage on tax on trucks. That is really an inconsistency.
Well, Senator Tony Wong, because we are unfortunately running out of time, I have a feeling at some point in the next day or two, it would be helpful if we could get, you know, lawmakers back on the air. I know that you guys are down to the wire. I know you're going to be voting on major pieces of legislation and you'll be busy. But if you have even a couple minutes of your time as we get closer to Wednesday, I'll probably have you pop back on if you're available.
I would absolutely love to. But if I can say quickly, the marijuana debate seems to be a fait accompli. But nowhere in our conversation, Melissa, have we talked about societal addiction cost, nor have we addressed the public safety concerns. People might have said, let's proceed and put this through and we'll figure it out later. But when you have no means of testing for impaired driving, you have no means of having input for societal cost, are we really putting the cart before the horse purely because of money? These are major implication decisions. And again, we're doing it under one-party rule without any input from major shareholders. Mm-hmm. It's the frustration we have. It's not representative government.
Yeah. Well, Senator Tony Wong, we appreciate you being honest on the show and sharing every week what you're seeing at our state capitol. Thank you so much, and we'll talk again really soon.
Have a great day. Take care.
Thank you. Hey, good morning. We are checking in now with our morning show marriage counselor, Bob Donovan, and we're talking about this really great question that I think we overlook a lot. Why did you get married? Why are you asking that this morning, Bob?
Yeah. Hi, Melissa. Well, it's timely just because on Saturday, my wife and I went to a wedding, a beautiful wedding up in Ridgefield of this young couple. And just I'm sitting there listening to the pastor words and the couple's vows they make. And I said to myself, man, these guys get it. I mean, they talked more about why they're getting married than who they're getting married to. So I thought about that, and I said, you know what? Let's talk about that Monday, because I'm not so sure many couples think about that.
Yeah,
a deeper question.
Like the purpose of marriage. And in my understanding from you, Bob, is that the majority of young people today kind of think more about their who, like the person they're marrying, like you mentioned, versus the why. So what have you found in your research over the years?
Yeah, well, number one is that's exactly where most couples spend their energy. And I'm not saying they shouldn't, because you should have, you know, characteristics and what you're looking for. So I've seen that. I've seen a lot of young couples focus entirely on the who, their characters, what they want. When I Google the purpose of marriage, I get, you know, the qualities to look for in your future spouse. So that's what you get. But in our, I know we've done this, I've talked about this on the show, for 15 years, we've done a workshop for young couples, and we spend probably the first 2 weeks on the purpose of marriage and why you're considering marriage. So I have seen couples not focus on that and not try to answer that question for the most part. It came to light really with this one couple where, they went through our class, and then 3 years later, they actually got divorced. And I remember speaking to her at church, and I just asked her, you know, what happened? And she said, you know what? She said, I didn't listen to you guys. She said, I was feeling pressure from my family, my peers. I was growing older. And I said to her, like, well, we talked about that in, like, the first 2 weeks. And she said, I blocked it out because I really was driven to get married. So I think that illustrates a lot of young couples that – they just are driven to get married and to find the right person. They fall in love with somebody. I will say that, if this sounds a little crazy, but love in itself isn't substantial enough to last over a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you get that? Because right,
yes.
When you fall in love with somebody, and that's the reason for getting married. And again, I'm not saying that shouldn't, but...
But people and circumstances change, Bob.
Absolutely,
constantly.
Right?
Even like a month after the wedding, it's different. It's totally different. And we're talking to our marriage consultant, Bob Donovan. So just saying I love him or her is just not enough, because honestly, that does change. It changes over time very quickly. So what would you say, you know, to anyone listening right now, whether they've only been married a year, 5 years, 10 years, 50 years, you know, how we should think or maybe adjust our thinking around marriage?
Yeah, that's a great, I like how you frame that, because you really, it takes an adjustment. It really takes a mindset and attitude adjustment. And it, you're right, it doesn't matter. But I will say that couples should take a check just to adjust their thinking about it, because if it's down the wrong pathway, it's likely going to lead to disappointment. So I want to talk a little bit more about kind of the deeper purpose of marriage, because that's really what I've seen work in young couples. So I would say, this is what I found, that the deeper purpose of marriage really is to learn how to love like God loves.
Mm.
That's really it. When you're in it and life hits and you've fallen in love with somebody, it's just not going to last a lifetime. When you're dealing with illness or job loss or, you know, some emotional issues, it's just not. But if you enter into marriage saying, look, I am going to allow myself to be changed, to learn how to love my spouse sacrificially, to learn how to expend grace and compassion and faithfulness and sacrificial love. Like, this world doesn't teach you to do that.
No, it does
not. So that's kind of the deeper purpose of marriage as I see it.
And we're talking again to Bob Donovan here on WICC. He is our marriage consultant. So, you know, I know that this idea of also just inviting God into our marriage, I know that was one of the things we learned in your class, Bob, was the idea of it's not just you and your spouse. There's a third entity there, and that is God. But, you know, could you talk about that? Maybe if God is not already in somebody's life, how do you then have him become a part of your marriage?
Yeah, and that's so true. We do. We focus a lot on that, because really every marriage has this third entity, and that's God and living by biblical principles. And if you're not living by that, you're living by something else. Either you're what your parents learned or what the culture teaches, which is not enough. So I would say wherever couples are, to really kind of check that point and really just extend an invitation and just ask the Lord to kind of come into your marriage and help you become a different spouse. And I will say, I'll give you a couple of tips here. One of which is, when you do that, you learn to see your spouse like God sees them.
Mm.
You learn to see them. Now, think about this. If you looked at your husband, like, and I know we talked about this, so I know you do this, but if you learn your husband or your wife as God's chosen daughter or son, and God as your father, heavenly father-in-law, if you thought about that every day, I think about that with Karen, that she is God's daughter, and God's her father-in-law. Like, how would you treat her or him differently?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one practical way to do that. Another way, and again, I'm bringing back some things that we talked about in our class, right? That the world pretty much says, and if you listen to marriage advice, marriage is 50-50.
Which is baloney, right? That's a terrible thing. Yeah, exactly. It's because you're always. I always say it's contract versus like it's the idea of like a marriage is a contract. Like if you do 50%, I'll meet you halfway, and that's just that just I think puts a lot of falsehoods into marriage.
It doesn't work. It doesn't work because number one, my 50% is different than Karen's.
Again, Karen's right.
And then also, when you say that, you're basically implying, if you do your 50%, then I will do my 50%.
Yeah.
So we basically talk about having 100-100, just having a heart that desires to give 100 all the time. Now, that's not possible. But if I have that expectation and heart, and my wife did this when we went through her illness with her mom, had Alzheimer's, she basically said, I'm not going to be able to give you what I need. I'm not going to be at my best.
Right.
So I knew, man, I got to step up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if I have that attitude of giving 100%, I'm not going to be disappointed.
Right.
So it comes with a whole different attitude of, you know, giving 100 of yourself.
Yeah. And it's also, I think it goes right in line with another point that you have, which is that God wants a husband and wife to complete one another versus competing with each other. And I think a lot of these different outlooks on marriage, they're not the typical, they're not the norm. If you were to look up a lot of different, I would say, advice on marriage, some of these things, if you don't have, like you were saying, kind of a religious aspect to it, you're not going to get these different ideas. You're not going to understand them fully. And Bob, I unfortunately we've run out of time, but if somebody wants to talk to you more about this, dive into this, understand how to incorporate God in their marriages, how do they reach out to you?
Yep, sure. That's great. It would be B Donovan, email, B Donovan, D-O-N-O-V-A-N at blackrock.org.
Well, Bob, we always appreciate having you on. Thank you so much, and we'll talk again really soon.
All right, Melissa.
Thank you.